Welcome to Clay and Iron, and I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, and our special guest this evening is Barry Shamish. Barry is directly calling us from Jerusalem, and he's been an investigative journalist for many years. I consider the top investigator in Israel as to what's really going on behind the scenes in Israel, which is a very important, although it's a small country, it's a very important situation in the whole world as to what's going on. And the events that are happening here are a microcosm of what's happening worldwide in terms of the developments of the New World Order. And if you don't believe it's really happening, listen to Barry. He's always enlightening, and he's so straightforward. Welcome to the program, Barry.
Thank you. I'm not in Jerusalem, but neither here nor there.
Yeah, you're close. So tell me, Barry, you mentioned before we went on air that there's a new CD that you have available on very, very important topics. Tell us a little bit about what you're researching lately and this CD and how important it is in terms of what's going on in Israel. And, of course, Israel is so important in the whole world.
That's a lot in 2 seconds.
I'll let you run with it. I'll give you a promo here, and there's no interruption, so you can go for 5, 10, 20 minutes if you want.
Well, the CD is called Dying First, the Vatican's New Crusade for Jerusalem, and it's 2 hours about the Vatican's New Crusade for Jerusalem. We didn't warn your listeners, but one tiny thing, my voice will be 20% bad tonight. I had a stroke a month and a week ago, and I'm in the midst of the world's fastest recovery, but it's still problematic a bit. Have a little more confidence that you'll understand me.
Absolutely. I can understand you really well. And if you get tired, just tell us, and I'm fine. Yeah.
The surgeon just saw me yesterday, the guy who was my personal doctor when I was in the hospital. He said my recovery is truly miraculous and all that stuff.
Well, you must have more to do here on this mud ball we call Earth. And what you have to say is I think, one of the most important commentaries and journalistic bravery in terms of what you're dealing with in Israel that I've ever seen, because this issue is showing the levers of powers in operation controlling the world. So what's the background for this very remarkable CD on Zion First, the Vatican's New Crusade for Jerusalem, which no matter what religion you are or where you live in the world, this is going to affect you. What's the background, Barry?
The background is the Vatican have really never stopped the crusade for Jerusalem. That the founding of the new country of Jerusalem, of Israel, is largely based on the Vatican's desire to have Jerusalem back and use Jerusalem as a capital, a worldwide capital, no exaggeration about this either, the newly emerged Catholic Church. They've got mighty big plans, this Rome. And people actually think the Vatican is weakening because, religious belief is so weak in Europe. But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It's an organization with tremendous, amounts of capital worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
Unless anyone thinks that about a billion Catholics, whole continents been Catholics, it's not power, they're wrong.
Right, it's not just even that, there's money that goes beyond that, this dynastic wealth that goes back for millennia that has been hoarded away, and it's been cooperatively hoarded with...
it's not just that, they have the land.
Right.
You know, more than anything else, they have land everywhere on this planet, there's plenty of it around Jerusalem.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, they have wealth, lots and lots of wealth. And the amazing part is they're telling the story that they're poor, they're broke, they're bankrupt. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
But you're already rich when you're holding real estate that they're holding. But that's neither here nor there. They like Jerusalem a whole lot. They really like Jerusalem. And they've got their eye on this city, but they have been since the beginning of the last century, when they started a real building program in Jerusalem, which included the Domitian Abbey, the Lutheran Church. It included three major churches built Now, this is the part that people have trouble understanding, and frankly, I'm not sure I understand this. Maybe half of it. When Kaiser Wilhelm was in Jerusalem to oversee the building of the Domitian Abbey, that was, if I'm not mistaken, it was 1898.
Right.
No, it was 1896. Whatever. It was 1896. Peter Hessel was here with him. And the history books tell us a story of an amazing failure. No. That's what the history books were told to tell us. In those days, to get to Jerusalem, to be a national leader, no less, and arrive in Jerusalem, the mission had to be incredibly important. You didn't just go to Jerusalem. This was a wild country. The roads were, there weren't roads. They were trails. And you had bandits everywhere. It's a very dangerous trip to go to Jerusalem in 1896. Kaiser Wilhelm did just that. And Theodor Herzl, the father of Zionism, was like 1 foot behind his, what's the word? His party, call it that. And somebody has to ask why this meeting was taking place. And the history books don't answer it. It's such an important meeting. The father of modern Israel, of labor Zionism, Theodor Herzl, and Wilhelm are both in Jerusalem in 1896 discussing land for churches. And nobody really understands why, because it really has never even contemplated
strange
why.
Strange connection, isn't it? It's a very strange connection.
It's not just the connection. It's the trouble.
Right.
Why would they do this?
Right. And why is there such a strong connection? You think, why would they be building Christian churches and it's supposedly tied in with Zionism? Who are the real, if you want to call it as they say, who will the real Zionists stand up?
Well, the Germans were friendly British.
Right.
Who put up a major church, which of course exists today, before them.
Right.
So we've got, Britain, Germany, and the Zionists are all fighting for Israel in 1896. And no one else, as near as I can figure, no one else cares less. The Turks are holding on to it. Now here's where things get a little strange. The Turks refuse to give up any part of the land for a Jewish state. It was a downright refusal. Now, that refusal cost them. It cost them their empire. Whatever happened in Jerusalem in 1896 eventually led to World War I. And that was the war that ended the Ottoman Empire.
Right. And in fact, it was a distraction up in Yugoslavia with the Archduke Ferdinand and so on. Killed. What's really going on is it was issues down in Israel that actually triggered off World War I. How did that happen?
I don't know if I go that far to say it was a sole cause.
But it's part of the whole background, though, right?
It's in there.
Yeah.
There's something going on, without a doubt, between Germany and Britain over Jerusalem. Both of them consider Jerusalem extremely important. That is in there. These are historical facts. But they're hidden. They're really remarkably hidden. The need for the Vatican, and by the way, Germany is included. The Germans were always the policemen of the Vatican for Europe, and they were going to be the policemen for the Vatican in Jerusalem in 1896. Wilhelm was not here for Germany; he was here for the Grand German Republic, the First Holy Roman Empire, Charlemagne's Empire.
Right.
What they're trying to do is rebuild their first great empire.
Right. You can see it step by step. In fact, the latest moves that are going on now, even are proceeding, are all just a continuation of this.
Well, it's more than a continuation. Paris. Now, Shimon Peres is Israel's. Somehow the Israeli people cannot realize what a murderer he is. He's a criminal. He's a deeply sick criminal mind, and he's working for the Vatican. And this is more than just having a slight impact on Israel. He's number two in the Kadima party, in the ruling party. He's number two. Ehud Olmert, he's one Ehud Olmert away from being prime minister again, from running this place. And Why Omer believes he can overcome this, I don't know. But some deal was made between Peres and Olmert before the election to kill Sharon and take over the country. And this, of course, I don't know if I can use the word we on your show, but in Israel, more than half the Jews of the country realized that Yitzhak Rabin was murdered and that Shimon Peres was a murderer.
Right.
Now the same thing is going on all over again, this time with Sharon. And what gets me, and it reminds me of where I was 10 years ago with Rabin, is how hopeless it looks. Now, when I started with Rabin, I didn't think there was any chance, and I had to do it word of mouth, person by person. Very frustrating. Probably gave me this damn stroke, ultimately. Although, I think it may have been caused by other people, but nonetheless, the need to convince the country was strong enough that they kept it up. And I actually did convince the country. I don't know if I've got that for Sharon anymore. I don't know if I have that kind of energy. But it was the same. It was even a worse murder.
He had a Lady Diana drive, I'd like to call it.
No. What do you mean?
Well, some of the things that happened were kind of just didn't make sense. Can you fill us in?
Well, it wasn't a lady. I would worry more about the bodyguard.
Exactly.
I don't even know who was driving him those days. He was someone from the Shabbat Secret Services. The real problem was the bodyguard. You had him moving.
Right.
Brought him to the hospital twice.
Well, exactly. That's the kind of thing I was thinking of in terms of the ambulance and the fact that the kinds of therapy he got, even knowing the condition that they knew medically beforehand, is contraindicated. All of these things were definitely big red flags saying that what's
going on.
They
said a poison. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
They killed him.
Exactly. It's obvious that they killed Sharon because they wanted to do. And what's their agenda and why Sharon now?
Sharon was drinking tea all by himself in the Knesset with Shimon Peres when he collapsed half an hour later.
Right.
That was his first stroke. They discovered, and they hid from the public, the doctors, and I want those doctors investigating. I came close to having someone forcing the police, but he was a coward. He chickened out. But neither here nor there, those doctors have to be investigated. They discovered that Sharon had CAA, a weakening of the brain blood vessels.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
They gave him the anticoagulants, which further weakened the muscles of the brain. They gave him the worst thing, and they told him to go to his farm 100 miles away in the Negev without a doctor, no doctor anywhere, to die. The last person to see him alive, the last person who poisoned him in some way or another, was Ehud Olmert. Olmert got permission to be prime minister for 3 hours. The next day, when Sharon was supposed to have an operation on his heart, they found a hole in his heart, which he'd had his entire life, by the way, decided that now they had to operate on it. But that's neither here nor there. It was probably an excuse, not a real thing. Nonetheless, the day before the operation, Olmert meets Sharon at his farm, gets his papers signed, and Sharon is, again, a half an hour later, he's on his way to Jerusalem. Now, on his way to Jerusalem from the Negev is a minimum hour and a half to get to the hospital.
Right.
They pass the Roka Hospital in Be'er Sheva, a very good hospital, and they don't stop. There's no doctor in the car. We don't even know where they picked him up. Somehow he was in the car when they arrived in Jerusalem. In other words, they knocked Sharon, they killed him, they murdered him.
Yeah, absolutely. And why now, though? You're there.
Oh, and incidentally, there was a helicopter which could have flown him to Jerusalem to the hospital in 10 minutes.
Of course, they have the same kind of level trauma and other facilities as we have in America. Why now, though? Why, Barry, did they do this to Sharon? He seemed to be literally on the dark side.
Well, because it's Paris's last chance. Now,
right.
The day before Sharon finally died, he was finished, politically finished. How do we summarize this? The Slat brothers of the Slat family of Vienna has been building casinos in Israel at least one very big one in Jericho they built, and they got a lot of income from money laundering. I've heard the figure of $800,000 a day was laundered money coming out of that casino. And the PLO rightists, call them the Hamas if you want, they want that casino shut down because Islam isn't all that fond of gambling. And they did shut it down. Now it was up to Sharon to rebuild it. He was paid about $3 million in bribes to rebuild that casino.
Right.
And he took the money and he took the bribes. And they sent the computers to the Israeli police. They sent a son from Vienna with those computers, told the police he's coming. They set up Sharon to be taken out of politics. And about 18 hours before he was finally taken out for the last time, the police leaked the results of their report on the three computers given by the Straff family, and they said, that's it for Sharon. We have the final proof that he took millions of dollars in bribes.
Right.
So whoever was working good and hard to make sure that Sharon or his Kadima party didn't succeed. Sharon was finished even before he was killed.
Right.
And this, for some reason, is thoroughly ignored by all the left-wing, even the centrist writers who claim they have no bias, are all saying that had Sharon run, Kadima would have got 44 seats and the country would have been different. That's nonsense. He would have been a deeply wounded politician, and he probably wouldn't have been able to run, and Kadima would have been wrecked. And everyone's ignoring this. And it's very hard to figure out what happens with his Sharon and his vindication business.
Well, what happens now in Israel? What's the next step?
Nothing happens. For Peres will do his best to become prime minister, and he'll take us through the Vatican path.
Right. Now, why is this so serious, not only for Israel and everybody in the Middle East, but why is it so serious what's going to happen? Because this is a very nasty thing that's going to happen.
Why is it serious? Number one, it's serious for my country because it's going to bring them down. It's going to make this country disappear ultimately.
It's also going to make it a very dangerous situation. You have a situation where you have undefensible borders, you've got all these weapons, you've got people that are being...
The PLO next to you throwing rockets. You've got the Hezbollah in the north with 18,000 Katyushas aimed at the whole north of the country.
Right.
This country can be destroyed tomorrow.
Right, and if anybody has sense, obviously they get out of Israel with all of this happening. But it also, Israel is armed to the teeth itself, so if you get some crazies that say, look, we have nothing left to do, we're going to push...
You can't get rid of all the crazies. Okay? It's not that simple. You've got the Arab world, it's a few hundred million people.
Yeah, I know.
And we're not going to get rid of them. They're going to get rid of us. We're not going to get rid of them.
I know, but, obviously, but things could get very messy.
We could cause some damage.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
It'll be very, very messy. Because
extremely messy. They don't want a war to the finish, perhaps. But nonetheless, they're going to win a war like that.
Right.
That's the mess. It's just a matter of how far they're willing to fight. Now, right now, they're willing to fight to the end of Israel. And our government... Now, I guess I should bring in the Council of Foreign Relations, because that's who's wrecking Israel from New York.
Right. Here, the CFR actually is tied in directly with the Trilateral Commission, with, of course, the Pope, doing this. Now, how is it all tied together?
With anyone, including the Vatican, wrecking the world. There's no good doubt about that. Again, that's your problem in the States, I suppose, they've managed up till now to keep themselves hidden from you. But that's not going on any much longer.
No.
This stuff is far better known than it was even last year.
Absolutely.
What the CFR is known in the United States far more than the forces wrecking Israel are known in Israel.
Exactly, and they're going to dismantle it, which is an extremely dangerous thing for everybody in the Middle East and the whole world, because I think of Israel almost like a detonator, and as they make the nation of Israel apart, and as they make it...
Yeah, but they built it.
But they're also setting this up for this change or transition to this new global capital that they have in mind.
They built it with that in mind. You can't dismiss where ISIL came from, and you can't dismiss where the Shia fire came from.
Right.
It came from the same little offices, by the way, mostly in London, but you got some Germany in there too. And
it goes right back
to
the Knights Templar and to the basically the original Crusades.
No, that's not Zionism.
No, I'm referring to the plans by the CFR and these people. They're actually trying to resurrect the same old Templar capital.
Well, that's simply the Vatican side of it.
Right.
That's simply the Vatican's main role in having anything to do with all this. But it's a little more complicated than that. But neither here nor there. Zionism itself, the stuff that built Israel, is not all that old.
Right.
And I'd say about 1860s, 70s, the machinery is put in process from England and Germany. This England and Germany problem with Zionism is one of the biggest problems in the world. And how should we put this? It isn't the Jews that are the Zionists. And this is where things get extremely tricky.
This is important for you to say this because you're a Jew and you're in Israel and you're explaining this. And people say, well, what does he mean? And you have the clearest explanation that I've ever heard, but I'm going to let you just run and explain
it. Well, again, if your readers have any yuzma, I'm thinking the Hebrew word, you know, the scope business on little things can bother you. If they've got any self-interest in somehow controlling the planet, maybe they should have a look at my latest book, Chaptaitsvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust, because
right.
That's the answer.
Right, and that book is very important. Repeat that title again, Barry, so people will, they can contact you by email, too. And how do they do that, Barry? It's
write me. Chamish, Chamish. At NetVision, that's one word, netvision.net.il. Chamish at netvision.net.il. And this book explained that Zionism was founded by, anti-Jews.
Right, exactly. Isn't that wild? It's hard to wrap your mind around that, so continue.
Oh, God, man. Fine. The anti-Jews themselves are followers, of someone named Chaptaitsvi. He was the false messiah of Judaism in the 17th century. He took Judaism to its exact opposite. In other words, whatever is written in the Torah, the opposite is true. Do not kill means go and kill. Do not rape, I mean. You adulter day and night under this great new religion.
Right.
The original Judaism of Zionism wasn't Judaism. And the Jews hated it. They hated anything to do with Zionism. Also the 19th and early 20th century, when after the Holocaust, it became too late to do very much about it. But, especially, the Jews who cared, the Orthodox religious Jews, they hated it. And they hated it because it was anti-Jewish. Their goal, it was a mitzvah, it was a blessing to kill Jews. It was actually a blessing to kill Jews who did not accept this false messiah as the messiah. And when you look at the Holocaust, you cannot ignore Zionism's role in it. And here's where you've got a big, big, big problem. It's the big problem is the anti-Semites. You've got anti-Semites and many millions of them on this planet who are making these claims. Their problem, and it's, again, the problem is enormous, is the Jews, the Jewish people weren't involved in any of this stuff.
Right.
They were thoroughly, completely innocent.
Right.
So you've got a typical Israeli who thinks he's a Jew, and he's got his leadership, and he can't understand how they're so crooked.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's more than amazing.
Yeah.
How they can keep this up and how they can keep it from the people and for so long. And there's no more ignorant people on this planet than the Jews. No more. And one of the reasons is they're so afraid of the anti-Semites that they're willing to sweep under the carpet anything. I mean anything. that the anti-Semites don't get an upper hand. Now, my opinion is very different. I couldn't care less what the anti-Semites think. They mean nothing to me. We've got ourselves our own problem. We're getting wiped out. We're getting murdered, and there's going to be no one left. So, who cares what an anti-Semite thinks? But the Jewish people will protect their crooked leaders. And this is this puts us in deep jeopardy. As I said, my philosophy is we can't have these people around anymore. They have to be exposed. They have to go.
Yeah.
Now, don't think that this is an even battle. I am highly the minority here.
Absolutely. And so with this latest change, obviously, there's nothing going to happen. But obviously, there's this transition.
This is what's
going
to happen. The Vatican are going to come in now.
Yeah.
Okay? They're going to go into their endgame agenda and start doing it.
Right. And what's this endgame agenda? What is their agenda to, you know, obviously it's
ultimately it's the whole Middle East is one giant block, with them, at the cashier's, stand. I mean, it's the same as they do everywhere. They take over the money of a region and use their armies as force to back themselves up.
Right. So it's very similar to setting up like another block.
An EU,
like Europe, where the same bankers and the papacy and everything.
That's what they're doing. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
And, they've got Afghanistan and Iraq under the army's direct control. And they'll spread the thing to Iran and Syria and whatever they have to do. And again, to make the Arabs Nazis was remarkably easy. You have to create a situation where you get these Arabs to be as dumb as Germans. Now, no one could be dumber than Germans. I mean, really. They got these people turned into lunatics, in the 30s. Other complete lunatics.
Right.
And they got to do the same thing with the Arabs to get a good war going.
Right, yeah, they radicalize them, right?
Pardon me?
They radicalize them.
This is beyond radicalization, okay?
Yeah. Beyond, yeah.
And this we're talking about something way beyond radicalization.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't
they turn
them
into lunatics.
Right.
Now, the Arabs today are almost as crazy as the Nazis. They're not there yet, but let me tell you, they're very close.
Yeah, and obviously the policy that America has had in Iraq, where they could have done some things better, they in fact do everything to create even more hatred as part of their
course.
Policy. To
that
amplify the hatred,
beginning.
Amplify the craziness, to make them completely rabid.
Of course,
part of their policy.
Business was Abu Ghraib, the army didn't know who the perverts, they didn't know who to, everything is done, by selecting people to do it.
Right.
Okay, they're not crazy. For an Arab man to be mocked by a U.S. woman soldier is beyond the kind of hatred that would cause is beyond anything your average American can understand. Your average American doesn't know how to hate properly. The Arabs know how to hate.
Yeah,
and what they're doing is being turned into new Nazis.
Right.
Now, the real problem is when America seems to be taking a stand against terrorism. It's all lies.
Right,
they couldn't care less about Israel.
Right.
They could not care less about the fate of Israel. Pardon me?
Israel's part of the game, actually. It's set up to actually be a fall guy.
Let's put it this way. If something happens to Israel, the actual leaders of the country are well protected. They're not going to lose anything. They're going to be very well off no matter what happens.
If
the average person trying to make a buck here, who is going to lose everything, going to lose the works.
Right.
What they're doing now with Israel is they're building it up to be like Singapore. They're building railways. They're in fact wrecking the land of Israel. There's nothing left in the center of the country. They're taking every piece of land and turning it into Singapore, which, by the way, leaves us very little land without Judea and Samaria. Where can people go? They can go back into the center of Israel, take their trains into their crowded cities, and wait for the end. How long can you defend into the 1948 borders of Israel?
Right.
We need another war like 1948 where one out of 100 citizens, not citizens, young men, soldiers, die. The people will flee before that happens again.
Right.
And they're setting all that up again.
Yeah, so it's all setting up to be another big war. But now we have much bigger guns. And of course...
Oh, more people will die. Fine.
Right. More people...
And so it'll be even worse.
I know
the
from
fact
my...
of the matter is the borders were never any good if you had to have a state. Now, you've got all the Jews here. They managed through horrible machinations to get half the world's Jews into this country. We got to defend it. Now we got no choice.
Right.
What choice have we got anymore?
In fact, they purposely did that to corral as many Jews as they could into Israel, just like the Warsaw Ghetto.
Let's put it this way. The corralling has just begun with the building of the walls and the reduction of the territory, but that's what they're doing, essentially. Now, one way or another, there's only one way out of this. The Arab leaders were just as crooked in every sense. In the late 1940s, to this day, they're all crooked. But they were placed in power. Now, how we can... They were placed in power by the CFR and so forth. By the British in 1917, the British, when they captured Saudi Arabia and the whole Gulf area, they installed the leaders. It's not the Arab people's fault that their system is so dreadful.
Oh no, now, it's totally the British. The British control the Bin Laden family, or are there at the grace of the Queen Elizabeth II? You know,
that's probably a little farther from me, but I know the construction family has ties to the Bush family.
Carlyle Group, of course, is they have shareholders that has the Queen and the Bush family, and of course the Bin Ladens, and there's a number of other royals, but of course the ones that are in power are all at the grace of the British royals going right back over a century.
I would be a little suspicious of the whole business of royals.
Yeah.
This new world order was found to destroy the royal families throughout Europe, not to help them. But neither here nor there.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that the British real rulers are these Sabbateans.
Right.
Are people who used to be Jewish. Churchill, Winston Churchill's mother is Jewish. Now, this is something that should be known. It should be well known that Winston Churchill was a Jew.
Right.
And her mother's name was Rosenberg, and you'll find it wherever you look on the internet if you actually go looking. And what you find is that Hitler's father was a Jew. And the first thing Hitler did after he... I got a lot of whistles coming out there.
Do you? Are we still on there? Don, are we
still
on?
I'm still here.
I'm still here, too. Go ahead. We could be getting zapped, you know.
That episode's being zapped. I mean,
some of this information they don't want out because it's a very important issue.
Somebody got excited when they heard that. I do these radio interviews, and whenever there's something exciting said, they blow it.
Repeat it for everybody who's listening.
The first act that Hitler took after he captured Austria was to destroy the town he was born in. Look, you go on the internet, you'll find that his mother, his father's mother, that's it, was working for the Rothschild family. She was a maid. One way or another, she got pregnant by a Rothschild. And you'll find that these, again, were called Sabbatean Jews, if you want. But I don't use that because they've been Christian mostly. But they are causing so much trouble. Now, this branch of the New World Order called Sabbateanism, named after Sabbatai Tzvi, the false Messiah, to repeat myself, is causing so much trouble on this planet.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. In fact, you pulled out one of the most important central issues of the New World Order. People really need to know the connection between these Sabbateans and the Vatican. And it's so bizarre that if you wrote this up in a novel, people would say, that's not believable, but it really is.
They're fighting each other. They're essentially fighting each other.
Right.
And every now and then they force themselves to work together.
Right.
Here's an example of how they work together. The Holocaust was not supposed to kill all of European Jewry. Hitler was too good at it. They were supposed to, and I'm using a quote now. They expected about 2 million strong young people to survive, and they would go to Israel and form a state. But Hitler was too good at the Holocaust. Okay? Israel would have been an extremely strong state with 2 million European Jews. But we know the story. Only 100,000 were left.
Right.
And they destroyed European Jewry, thinking they would replace it with a Sabbatean state in Israel, and they destroyed our tradition in Europe. It's useless now. There's a few 100,000 people in a few places, and that's it.
Right.
One has to understand that without labor Zionism, there was no Holocaust.
It
wouldn't have been promoted. Hitler wouldn't have risen. And without that understanding, you don't know the mess the Jews are in.
Right.
But if that understanding isn't taken at true value, absolutely true value, it'll be used against the Jews. That's what the Jews are so afraid of. The Jewish people know nothing about all this. But on top, there is a cabal of former Jews, many of them. They're now more Christian or Muslim than they are Jews. But nonetheless, they are wrecking Judaism, and they're at work day and night.
Right, and
that,
so, so what they're basically doing is they're anti-Jews. They're people that are actually trying to create a state of destruction to kill, literally, quote, their own people.
They wouldn't call them their own people.
Well, they're not even calling them their own. They're not.
They never would use our own people.
Right.
You get them everywhere. There's Stanley Fischer. People of the CFR and the World Bank, who's now Israel's central bank head, people actually think that he's just a good Jew. This guy is working for these people, and he could not care less about Israel.
Right.
And that never could. And you have these people with enough power to run the economy of the United States. That's where the whole central bank business comes into effect. The central bank are private banks that are just collecting American money. It's the biggest ripoff in history. But they're run by Sabbateans.
Right.
And this is just not understood in the United States. And I'm not sure why. Now, don't call the Sabbateans Jews. It's a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
They're more Christian than they are Jews.
Exactly. I like to call them what they are, which is basically if you want to call it Satanists, or you want Luciferians.
They believe in the opposite of good and bad, and they're taking bad, so you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very disturbing. And the thing that we have now is a situation where the latest saber rattling is against Iran, and of course that conflict is going to get very, very out of control, whether it's delayed the next...
It's not going to get out of control. The United States will either tell Israel to bomb their nuclear facility, or they'll do it, and it's over. It's not out of control at all. This is just not what's understood, that these issues that seem so big, that you watch them on the news, they can handle this in 2 seconds. They give the order to bomb the nuclear facility.
Right. But what happens let's say they have Chinese or Russian missiles, and they counterattack, and they do other things.
Counterattack what? Iran? So let Iran get bombed by Chinese missiles. What do we care?
No, I'm talking about the Chinese missiles that Iran has shooting at American, say, or shoot at Israel. I mean, how likely is that?
They can't reach Israel. And let's say they shoot at Israel. What are they going to be shooting at Israel?
Uh-huh.
At least as long as there's no nuclear arms, what are they going to be shooting that we can't handle?
Right. So you think that the aero system can take it out and...
Not forget the aero system. They don't have the nukes yet.
No, they don't have nukes.
So what if they slam a few...
Yeah, they're good. They're 10 years away from having nukes, unless they go on a buying spree and get them from North Korea.
It doesn't matter. You can take it out. Don't make an issue out of this.
Uh-huh.
It's not an issue.
So why have they not attacked already? Why has America not attacked already?
America is getting ready to.
Uh-huh.
These things can be taken out. Don't make a big deal out of this stuff.
Right. So in other words, it's very similar to what happened in Iraq back in the early 80s when the reactor was taken out there.
All right. So that's a good example. The core and the issue is that, first of all, the Iraqis have enough nuts running them that it doesn't take much to make them appear to be a danger to the world.
Right.
Okay, and you can make these people extremely dangerous. But the Iraqis, before Khomeini was put in power by the Vatican, as a matter of fact, he lived in Paris in exile for many years until the Shah was taken on the scene and he was returned. These people, the Iranian people, are good people. It's not a question of the Iranian people either.
Right.
You're not getting information from...
I know that the Iranian people have no intention of doing this. It's obviously the power brokers that are installing leaders, like bringing in the Ayatollah and all these other things, radicalizing.
You talk to Iraqi and Iranian Jews that were forced to move to Israel in the 50s or today. There was a re-immigration in the last 20 years. It doesn't matter. They'll all tell you the same thing. There was no serious anti-Semitism in Iraq or Iran.
Of course.
And more to the point, the Jews culturally really had a huge say in their music industry, in their film industry. They were part of this world. And then they were dragged out because of the Zionists and their allies convinced the leaders of these Arab countries to stir up the anti-Semitism and get them to Israel.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And you're right. What is the population? It was a huge percentage minority in these countries.
It was a minority everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, but all through the Middle East.
All through the Middle East.
Yeah.
It was never huge. But that minority in Iraq, which was about 400,000 or 500,000, controlled their culture.
Right.
And that's not an exaggeration. And by the way, I don't use the word control in any negative sense. It was a very, very good culture.
Right. You're talking about like... the doctors, professors, scientists.
I'm talking about the musicians.
Yeah, musicians.
I'm talking about the film stars.
That's what
Iraqi Jews were.
Right.
And that was taken away from these countries. And now they're culturally, they have no effect on anybody.
Right.
They're too provincial to have an effect on anybody. The point of the matter is Zionism was a terrible thing to happen, but it did happen.
Right.
And we're stuck here, half of us. Half the world's Jewish population is stuck here. And if we go backwards and backwards, we're not going to be here much longer.
Ah.
Okay? It's that simple. Now, the Arabs have a lot to make up for. I don't think there's been one regime that hasn't been thoroughly corrupt. They don't have such a thing as democracy.
Right.
And their treatment of women and children is appalling.
Isn't it?
They have plenty to answer to. And now, somehow or another, the good guys on both sides came up with a way that Israel could survive without horrible danger. And the Palestinians were worked into a Sinai Peninsula or Jordan, and Israel was left alone. Maybe you could get some peace if that system was feasible. The question is there anyone to talk to? And with the Arabs, they're so full of hatred, they're worse than the Nazis.
Well, of course, now with the war in Iraq, it's stirring up with their policy is the American government policy and the PEN Act, the Project for the New American Century, is to increase that hatred, to increase that anti-Semitism, to increase the polarization of this to make it even worse.
Well, yeah, but again, it's not like the Nazis. If you read histories of different groups, there was really one in the United States, but trying to save the Jews from the Nazis, these Nazi leaders gave in on any deal. You gave a deal, they were willing to save the Jews of everywhere, and that includes Eichmann. Eichmann's a very difficult story. He was also a Sabbatean, and he was working with the Jewish agency, hand in hand, and they sent someone named Kastner. It's a very famous story in Israel. If you want to read about it, Ben Hecht did this incredibly powerful version called Perfidy. It's a book you'll find on the internet. The Jews sold out their own people. 800,000 Jews were sent to their death when Eichmann wanted to save every one of them. He didn't want to kill all 800,000, and he didn't want to kill any if he didn't have to. And you find out that the only Nazi Israel ever convicted, if you can imagine that, one crummy Nazi in the whole history of Israel was brought back to Israel to shut him up from talking about the Hungarian Jewish affair. And he wasn't the first, believe me, he wasn't the first. And you start looking, when you start looking at the history of this country, it's not just a shame what's been done to the Jews. It's beyond shame. It has to end. The labor Zionism business has to end. It's utter evil. But you have, again, the problem that we got enemies.
Right.
Let's say we end it all. Are we going to be able to defend our people in Israel? And many Jews, I'd say almost all of them but me, think no, that we need this new world order to protect ourselves. But this new world order is destroying us. And it has done a terrible, terrible job of destroying Judaism in the last 150 years. And it's going to continue until there's none of us left. And to get the Jews to understand that they have to be fought, or there are going to be no Jews to protect very shortly. And that, let me tell you, is no easy job.
No, no. And this is a very real thing, and it's also an extremely dangerous thing, not just for the Middle East, but for the whole world, because the whole process of this, and if people don't believe that the New World Order is real, they need to see the play of events worldwide, the erection of, you know, internment camps in America, the coming of world IDs, the blocks of currencies, like we've had Joan Vian on this radio show. And
yeah, she's a nice lady. Again, I'm sticking to what I know. You're throwing up things that you know, and you apparently feel safe about them.
It does really fill in a lot of the blanks, though, Barry, when you explain this. And again, your CD is Zionism First, the Vatican.
Zion First. It's about Mount Zion.
Right.
That's where the Vatican tried to get a piece of property about 3 months ago.
Right.
They tried to get Israel to hand them over a chunk of Mount Zion to be a sovereign Vatican, I don't know, a state. Whatever you turn a room owned by a different state inside your country, that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah, and this is a very disturbing thing because people might think, oh, this is wonderful. No, it's not. This is going to be very dangerous.
Well, they sell everything bad as wonderful. That's how they sell it. They were going to turn this into a tourist site, and millions of Catholics were going to come because of this crummy room. Pay $5 and see this room, an actual Vatican-owned, sovereign, hegemony, the whole thing, room on Mount Zion. And again, to sell it to the Israeli public, no problem. You're going to get all these great Catholic tourists coming into your country and making you rich.
Right.
And it didn't work. This time around, it didn't work, but it's not over.
Yeah, yeah. So all of these events are happening. So so you see, you think the Americans are getting ready. They're probably going to attack the reactor. Do you think that they're making deals with the Russians and the Chinese to not interfere?
No, the Russians aren't part of this.
Are the Russians going, like, they've got lots of people.
They got nothing to do with it.
At the Bashar reactor, though, in Iran. They have like about 700 technicians and other people there.
Okay, these are issues I don't care about. Okay, quite frankly, let them build whatever they're going to build. They can destroy the reactor anyways when the time is right, and that's that.
Right.
Okay,
but of course, the fact is that they're 10 years away unless they go on the shopping spree and get
If there are 700 Russian technicians in Iran, then they've got the bomb already.
Right.
That's ridiculous. They don't have to make
what I've
bomb.
Heard from my sources, Barry, and I have other sources, is that they have the bomb, a dirty bomb. They have the Yakons missile system. They have the Sunburn missile system. They have lots of very nasty weapons now, and they've gone on a shopping spree with Korea, North Korea. So they have the modified solid fuel Taepodong missile.
So they'll be taken out.
Yeah.
Again, and
it's
going to
be very messy.
The third point. It doesn't matter. They'll be taken out.
Well, obviously, you come against America. America's weapon systems are so immense. What do they expect? But at the same time, there'll be lots of dead people in the Middle East. There'll be lots of destruction. There'll be lots of depleted uranium everywhere.
There will be something to defeat Iranian missiles. That's my whole point. Everything is in place. If they want to attack Iran, they don't quite yet have the word permission, because strangely enough, the Iraqi insurgents have caused a lot of disagreement about this Iraqi war. But they'll get it. And by the way, the Iraqi insurgents, I don't know what percentage is the Mossad, but there's plenty of weaponry and plenty of actions secretly being backed by the Mossad.
Right, in other words, it's the same as the British SAS. A lot of these things going on with the division and fighting one group against another as Mossad operations again.
Yeah, you get the Arabs fighting each other. It's a dream come true for them.
Right.
And the opportunity is just so there. You know, you don't even have to work on it anymore.
You have the Shias fighting the Shiites, and everything is nice and rosy.
You've got a situation where the Sunnis know they're finished if Iraq actually has a democracy. Now, this is what gets me, and I hate watching your media, and I don't anymore.
You can't watch the garbage news network.
And whatever network. It's trying to sell the democracy of Iraq, that America's mission is going to make every Iraqi free. What does that mean? It means that the Shiites forever rule Iraq.
Yeah, I know. How crazy is that? And
they're selling this as a wonderful gift of the United States, that the Shiites now get to run Iraq by a figure of one-third over Sunnis. Now, number one, who in their right minds wants another Shiite government if you can avoid it? If you can avoid it, you don't want two Irans. Okay,
right.
That's number one. But again, that's not the point. That means the Sunnis are just going to get wiped out by these people. It's a terrible thing to happen to Iraq. And even from the first day of this war, I would ask different journalists if they really believe it's worth the life of one American soldier to bring democracy to Iraq. Okay, if that's worth dying for.
Right.
And when you put it that way, they know there's something terribly wrong here.
Well, of course, it's another corporate war. It's another war by the transnational American-based global corporations.
Well, it's sure not worth dying in.
No,
and
absolutely not.
So now this New World Order people, I think, maybe went a little too far. Or maybe it starts getting very complicated with the fact that it looks like the Americans are losing. And that's where it starts getting extremely complicated. Now, who would be trying to make them lose is maybe a separate story. But I hate to say this, but Israel could get along with the Arabs. We have the exact enemy, precisely the same exact enemy. The Iraqi insurgents are fighting the same government that's forcing Israel to become another Warsaw Ghetto.
Right.
We're not talking about opposed to America taking over the Middle East. Israel should be deeply opposed to America having anything to do with the Middle East.
Right. In other words,
they're there and so forth,
you're both dealing with the same enemy.
If they could come and see it that way. The whole problem is that their leadership is firmly in the grimy little paws and talons of the New World Order. And who are you going to appeal to?
Right.
Yeah, it's a terrible mess that way. And worse comes to worse, Jews are such tremendous scapegoats. You have all these Arab children raised with this vicious anti-Semitism. How are you ever going to get them to listen to us, or at least actually sit with us Jews who are not part of the New World Order, and come to some sort of agreement?
Yeah, I know.
And the thing is, for thousands of years, that was
not a problem. The communities were together. They worked together. It was not an issue until all of a sudden, 150 years ago, they discovered oil, decided to move in there.
It's not just the oil, it's Jerusalem.
Yeah, exactly.
Oil pays for getting Jerusalem.
Right.
Now, what do you got with the Arabs? You have to convince them, finally, something that they all really know, that Jerusalem is not their third holiest city. That's a bunch of crap. Jerusalem isn't even in the Quran.
Right.
They know all this. At certain levels, they can be persuaded, I think. But I don't know. It looks hopeless. What are you going to tell them? We won't harm the Al-Aqsa Mosque. You could come worship there, but you don't get it. We just can't have two owners of Jerusalem. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a very tough situation, and it's going to get tougher, obviously, from what you say, Barry, that the powers that be globally, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Vatican's attempt to polarize this further, take over territory, it's all going to get more crazy.
You know what's really scary? This happened just a couple of days ago, but it explains it all. Jack Straw and Condoleezza Rice, who really shouldn't be friends at all. Why should they? They don't know each other from home and ground.
Right.
But nonetheless, they both show up at Iran same day to prod the government to create a lasting new parliament. Now, I don't know what was really going on. It wasn't that. But both these secretaries of state showing up in Baghdad on the same day is one nasty little meeting which took place that we don't know about.
Yeah, well, and of course, we know a lot of these things, like this other mosque that blew up in, I think it was the Shiite area. That was obviously a controlled demolition. All these things are being done to amplify the already existing hatred and make it worse.
Again, you don't have to make it worse. It's now as bad as it's going to get, really. How much more you're going to kill every Shiite to make it worse?
Well, what they're doing now is, of course, they're getting each group against the other. They're getting the Sunnis against the Shiites.
They have a democratically elected parliament. They can't sit down. It's been 4 months. They're too afraid to sit down.
Isn't that amazing? They cannot actually sit down and actually have parliamentary sessions.
Not if they want to live.
Yeah.
Now, you've got to figure again, this is something all of us who hate the New World Order should be happy to be seeing. But unfortunately, once again, they also hate Israel as much as they hate America.
Yeah.
And somehow they got to be educated that whatever is running Israel still is not the Israeli people. We're just trying to make a buck and get through a year.
Right.
Now, I don't know if they can be convinced of that most Israelis couldn't care less about Arabs.
Here's the point. We're all people. We're on this large spaceship all called Earth. We have different religions. We shouldn't be at each other's throats. We shouldn't be planning more wars. We shouldn't be planning each other's
death. We don't like them. What are you talking about? We wish they'd go away. It's nothing like that at all. But we could care less about Arabs.
Right.
Most Israelis in their greatest dream see the Pied Piper of Hamelin take them all to Jordan.
Right.
Okay? We couldn't care less about this planet. The fact of the matter remains that we don't want Arabs in our lives, and we're stuck with them. Now, if they feel the same way about us, based on that, maybe we can come up with something. There's nothing here that's pie in the sky. I'm talking about both of us preventing getting wiped out.
And that's what's very possible, because things could get, if not now, let's say down the road, when there are much more advanced...
30 seconds.
So,
I heard that.
Yeah, that was a very
all
good
right, anyone
Barry.
Wants my book, let me do the quick.
Chavis,
Chamish, at netvision.net.il. Netvision is one word, netvision.net.il.
Chamish at netvision.net.il. And do check out BBS Radio. We're going to have you back on, Barry, to give us more updates and more information. You give an amazing background to these things historically. And thanks, everyone, for listening to the BBS Radio and the Clay and Iron with Dr. Bill Deagle, MD. And our best special guest has been Barry Chamish.
Thank you very much, Bill. Nice job.
Take care.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much joy on your journey.